This podcast is a proud member of the Network of One Podcast.
On today's Bill of the Flatus Show, episode 120, Demons in the Hard Drive, MAME, Patrick Dempsey, and A Boarding House. All of this and more. The Flatus Show with Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Welcome, kids. Welcome to the Flatus Show for another week in our second week of De Tocqueville's Democracy in America. But first, I have some things to talk about. Let's see here. What do I have? Let's see. Let me find out. It's a lot, because I was listening to, finding out stuff. Anyway, let me get on. bumpers. I'm still looking for bumpers. I mean, Joe G just sent his bumper in last week, so people are still sending him in. I'm still looking for them, so if you have a podcast, or whether you have a podcast or not, send me a bumper, just like the things you hear today, where you identify yourself and that you're listening to the Flatus Show. I think they're called bumpers. I don't know what they are. I'm not involved with the professional radio industry, but I think that's what they're called. Anyway, let's see here. Let's start with news of the week. Johnny found a website called freerice.com, freerice.com. Go check it out. What happens is it's a vocabulary game, online vocabulary game, and for every word that you get right, 20 grains of rice is donated to World Hunger Bank or something like that, the World Food Bank. It is very fun, and it helps feed people. So freerice.com, I'll have the links in my show note, okay? Snow buntings. Second, I'm doing this in order. Snow buntings. Snow buntings are birds, and I found them, and Johnny looked at them, and it was a life bird for him. As you know, my longtime Flatus Show listeners, Johnny, my platonic other person, my platonic significant other, is a birder, and that was a life bird for him for his little snow buntings. He had never seen them before. There were about 50 of them, maybe even more, and they're really fantastic looking, and I saw them first. I was the first one to see them, and I told Johnny, so. Snow buntings. So look for snow buntings in your area if you're in the northeast. Or, I don't know if they... Sorry about that. I don't know if they're in the northwest or not. North, anywhere, you know, if they're just in the northeast or where they're at. But snow buntings. Go look for snow buntings. Let's see. FBI reports. Now, how did I find out these? Oh, yes. There is something which I want to, you know, I have to, actually, I forgot all about this. Give me a minute here. I'm going to pause. Okay, I'm back. The FBI. Okay, I got this from this information, and it is from the FBI website. And what I did is when I found out about it, I signed up for the FBI to send me updates for all of the things they do. So I think it's really interesting. I've been getting this in the mail, their updates. And it has everything that they're involved with and some really interesting things. So I'm going to talk about it in later podcasts. But anyway, what I want my listeners to know about is a scam, an identity theft scam, which is kind of insidious because it is based on your civic duty. So what it is is a caller claims to be a jury coordinator. If you protest that you never received a summons for the jury duty, the scammer asks you for your social security number and date of birth so he or she can verify the information and cancel the arrest warrant. Give out any of this information and bingo, your identity was just stolen. The fraud has been reported so far in 11 states, including Oklahoma, Illinois, and Colorado. This swindle is particularly insidious because they use intimidation over the phone to try to bully people into giving information by pretending they are with the court system. The FBI and the federal court system have issued nationwide alerts on their websites warning consumers about the fraud. So the short answer here is: don't ever give out your information to the social. Don't give out your social security number, date of birth, if you get this kind of call, because the jury apparently they don't do this. Okay. So be careful. Okay. Be careful. I care about my kids. Don't give out. Be careful. Be careful. And the cunts who do this ought to die. Now, these are the people. I'm not really for the death sentence at all. I'm really against the death sentence. However, it's people like these which I really think the death penalty should be for. Because what they do is they undermine the trust in society. And they really are antisocial. And I think they ought to be killed. There's also another thing, is that they're on the FBI website, okay? I read a story about a man in Washington State who was arrested for child trafficking a child for prostitution. It was actually him and his mother. The mother had shipped the child. They don't say how old the child was, but it doesn't make a difference. It could have been 15 or whatever. A boy. They didn't mention it was a boy or a girl. The mother gave the child false identity, fake driver's license, and shipped the child, gave the money to the child to ship the child to her son in Washington State, whereupon he forced the child to prostitute itself and bring him $500 a day, or he beat the child, which he did apparently, and also had sex with the child. And intimidated the child that way. Guess what kind of sentence he got? Well, first of all, guess how much the mother got? Okay, the mother got 2 years probation, okay? And the son got 7 years with the ability to have probation in, like, whatever number of years. Okay, these are the people that should... If there's a death penalty, right? These are the people that need to be killed. you have people death penalty proponents. You have the really far out crazy people who want to kill all the homosexuals and the adulterers. Okay, I don't really care about adulterers or homosexuals. I mean, I'm homosexual. There's nothing wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong with consensual sex among adults. And I don't think God really cares either. But I think God really does care when you take a child and prostitute it and beat up the child and do all that kind of stuff. I mean, God cares when you do it to anybody, whether it's a child or an adult. These are the people that really ought to just be put away. Now, of course, I'm Kenty and I'm full of compassion. And so I think, it should be done compassionately. So I think maybe the firing squad or death by hanging would be appropriate for them. Not that I really want to kill them, but at the same time, who wants their gene pool to pollute our the human race? I think it would actually do everybody good to murder these people. People who do this kind of thing. Not the prostitutes. I'm not saying the prostitutes. If you're a girl who's in the backseat with a boy like they did in Saudi Arabia, I'm not saying that. That's fine. I'm talking about these assholes who undermine the society, I think white-collar criminals ought to be murdered. I think they want to be capital punishment ought to prevail for white-collar criminals, like the Enron stuff. All those people, murdered. Get them out of the gene pool. We don't need them polluting humanity. You know, if we had the death penalty and we got rid of all these creeps, I bet you the world would be a lot better place, you know? Just round them up. And I'm not talking... Okay, drug addicts and drug pushers, if you're doing it with consensual... If you're selling the drugs consensually with, you know, other adults or whatever, whatever, Mary. You shouldn't be doing it because it's probably bad. But, you know, if you're doing it with just adults, it's fine. If you involve children or you involve prostitution or any other kind of antisocial behavior... playing loud music, you're going to be murdered with the death penalty. You know, and I'm really for this. I think it's a really good idea now that I think about it. You know, I was really against the death penalty, but the more I think about it, the more I'm for the death penalty. Only if it involves white-collar criminals and assholes. You know, people like, you know, people who are in churches, right, who are ministers, and they raise all this money, and yet they use that money to pay for expensive hotels and jets to, to fart around the globe with. Those people ought to be found guilty and stoned to death because it's biblical, because I think they would probably enjoy that. Okay, so that's that. Be careful on the internet. I mean, not on the internet. Be careful if you get a phone call. Facebook. My next thing is from Facebook. The other day... Okay, let me tell you about four Facebook people, which I have... they're for the different reasons I'm mentioning these people. It's actually a fifth, but he has another segment, okay? I got an email from two people wanting to be my friend on Facebook. One was Auntie Vera Charles, and the other one was Meli Gun Kazali, looks like a Turkish guy. He's really hot, too. But I just, you know, I let him be my friend, but restricted access to my Facebook account. Anyway, the other two, they've been friends for a while. Willard Xavier, he's been a Facebook friend for, like, since I started Facebook, but I really don't know who he is. I don't know if he's a listener or not. So, Willard, are you... of listener of the Flatus Show. The second one, then the last one is Trevor Carpenter, who I've known for long, it seems like forever. And he is a listener to the Two Guys, One Brain podcast. He had a podcast. He does photography. He's really focused on his photography. I think he stopped his podcast. And really terrific guy. And he's a Facebook friend too. Auntie Vera Charles, she's a podcaster. It's actually a man, okay? Goes by the name Auntie Vera. And so I listened to a couple of the episodes and downloaded actually probably more than a couple. I don't know how many I did. For like, you know, last couple months worth. Listened to it while I was working. And I found some interesting things I want to talk about. I think it's a really good podcast. Except... he keeps on referring to himself as fat, bald and bitter and you know, I don't care if you're fat. I don't care if you're bald. But when you keep on complaining about being bitter, I mean, it's like, you know what? That just turns me off. It's like, I don't want to hear that, okay? Okay, you're bitter. Get over it, Mary. Now, he's a voice actor who lives outside in the hills outside of Los Angeles, I think, and with his partner of 24 years. The episode which I heard, which turned me on to it, was he was talking about his partner's gooch, as he calls his partner. For those who don't know, Auntie Vera Charles and Gooch are from the musical MAME, or from the book from which it comes from, or, you know, whatever, the movie with Rosalind Russell. But anyway, MAME, or what do they call that? What's the name of the movie? Yeah, Anti-MAME, whatever. So go look it up, MAME, you'll find it. His partner Gooch was born December 16th, and he explained how Gooch's, had his experience growing up with a December 16th birthday and how horrible it was. And I'm born December 20th, and I absolutely identified with his trials and tribulations of being born so near the Christmas holidays. You can't compete with Christ, you know, the Son of Man or whatever. You know, there's just no competition. Give it up. So I have become in some ways a Seventh-day Adventist, just so I don't have to worry about my birthday. So, you know, I don't have to build up any kind of anticipation that I'm going to have actually kind of any kind of celebration for my birthday. So just like that's how I identify with Seventh-day Adventist, or is it Jehovah's Witnesses? Who doesn't celebrate their birthdays? Well, one of them, and identify with that. You know, I can identify with Jehovah's Witnesses or Seventh-day Adventists, whichever ones, or maybe they both don't celebrate their birthdays. Whatever. So yeah, getting back to Auntie Vera Charles, I listened to several of the episodes, probably more than several of the episodes, but I want to mention a couple of things. I think of his listening to him talking about his life, it sort of reminds me of a Ethan Mordden novel. And let's see here, what else? Oh yeah, he mentioned Maura O'Connell. Now let me tell you something about Maura O'Connell. Who knows about Maura O'Connell? Probably nobody, right? I didn't know anything about Maura O'Connell. Now, I used to work for the Wall Music Store in the Cambridge Side Gangsteria in Cambridge. And it was in 1992. And now I'm, you know, from that time, right, even before that time, I wasn't watching television. I really didn't. I stopped watching television for the most part. I mean, I watched Doctor Who, Channel 2, but I didn't watch network television, you know? And so I really didn't know too much about, like, who the big actors were, and I still don't know who the big actors are. I mean, I take a look at the, you know, and it's not like I watch it. It was like, you know, if I turn on the television and what's that, Hollywood Entertainment on tonight? Oh, my God, it's horrible. But they have people, all these women, and it's like, I don't know who is who. They all look the same to me, and I don't know any of the movies they're in, and I could care less about their lives. But anyway, it was sort of the same situation back then working at the music store. But this mall, the Cambridge Side Gangsteria, was right near a bunch of hotels. It's right near MIT. A lot of people came to the mall. I mean, a lot of, like, famous people, a lot of rich people, because the parents for their kids in MIT and Harvard, they stayed in the area. They came to the mall. We got a lot of celebrities in the mall. And I'd be working there, and people would say, oh, look, there's so-and-so from Hill Street Blues. I'm like, what? Who? Somebody from Hill Street Blues walked by the store, you know. And so this is the sort of thing that would happen all the time. So this guy comes into the store, and Sam is at the register. And I actually went up to him to help him because he was really cute. I remember he had a leather jacket on. Not like a motorcycle jacket, but like a blazer sort of, I guess. Sort of jacket. I don't know how to describe it. It was black. And this guy was as cute as a button. I was really jonesing on him. Right? Hold on. Hold on, John's asking me if I did. No, I have tea here. Or I have my low-calorie carbonated beverage here. Okay, so this guy was really cute, so I went up to him, like, can I help you find anything, you know? And he looked at me, and was like, no, nothing right now, you know. I was like, but, you know, he said, well, because he's looking at me, then he gives me an eye, right? I'm like, oh, wow, maybe this could turn into something. Woohoo! He was really adorable. So he's like, well, what do you recommend? You know, I'm interested in all sorts of music, you know. And, you know, Sam's at the register, and I'm, like, going around trying to, like, figure out, like, what's new. Like, you know, what is not normal, right? And so what came to mind was the newest Maura O'Connell CD. I didn't even know the CD that well. We had one copy, and the only reason why I knew about it is because, what the hell was her name? The woman from Warner Brothers, she came in to give us promos and, like, put up posters and stuff. Kathy. She gave me the promo CD for Maura O'Connell's most recent CD, which at that time was Blue is the Color of Hope. And so I'm like, we're walking by the folk section. I'm not even sure if she's folk or whatever, but that's where we put her. I'm like, oh, here, this is really good, because I actually had heard a song off of it. And he's like, really? I said, yeah, it's like folk. It's, you know, she's new, and actually she wasn't all that new. I mean, she had a few albums, but so I'm like, yeah, it's good. I like this. I would recommend this one. You know, no one's going to have this on your block, right? He bought it. So, you know, I sent him up to the register, and I was like, oh, he was so adorable. And he was looking at me, and I was looking at him, but I'll tell you why he was probably looking at me. So I'm like, yeah, there you go. Have a good day. Bye. So I went and, you know, had little fantasies about him, and, you know, I just thought he was a regular guy, okay? So Sam rings him up, and he comes over to me. He goes, do you know who that was? And I'm like, No, I don't know who that was. He goes, it was Patrick Dempsey. And I'm like, I still don't know who that is. And he was filming the movie With Honors at, you know, he was in town filming the movie With Honors at the time. And I sold Patrick Dempsey the Maura O'Connell CD, Blue is the Color of Hope. And now he's on Grey's Anatomy, I understand, because I did a little search on Google. And I had actually, it took me the longest time to actually find out who this guy was, because I was like, I know Madonna did the song for it, and, you know, I think it was Joe Pesci. I'm trying to type in the Google all the things about this movie. It took me forever, so I finally found it. So I thought that was really, really weird. So I'm bringing this up because Auntie Vera plays a song at the end of each of her episodes, and she played a Maura O'Connell CD. I nearly fell out of my seat. I don't know what album it was from. Maybe it was from Blue is the Color of Hope. So if you're listening, Auntie Vera, let me know if that's what you played. Okay, another thing is that Auntie Vera was drinking a martini, and she had a caperberry in it. And I have never heard of this before because I do that. I buy these caperberries, which are big caperberries. John thinks they look like testicles. And I love those in a martini. So I think that's really neat. Maybe it's a gay thing. So listen to Auntie Vera Charles. I'll try to have a link to her show. She's on Podcast. She does not have a website. She should. Next, Darren from Shawpink had the same question about Little Audrey that Tim asked. And then when I told him, he said he felt stupid. I think he said that. You shouldn't feel stupid, Darren. Never feel stupid, because you're a wonderful guy. Also, his dog, Teddy, is Jose's internet boyfriend. So you can go see a picture of Teddy at my website. You know, click on the podcast. Click on the microphone. And, you know, whatever. You'll see it. Click on the microphone, you'll get to my blogger site, blah, 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 blah. Samuel Philemon. He is a podcaster, I guess. He added me to Twitter. You see, all these podcasts I've been finding out about is because they've been social networking with me on my social network sites that I belong to, like Facebook and Twitter. Samuel Philemon is a riot. But he's also serious, so, you know, I think he's genuine, you know. I think he's, I don't know what the thing is, Samuel Philemon, but I love him. So look for Samuel Philemon on Twitter. Mark Ayers, a longtime listener. Hi, Mark. He's in West Virginia. He sent me an email that is a thing called global-o.org, and it's a global orgasm site, and they set aside a day for everybody to have an orgasm at the same time. So go to global-o.org. I'll have the links on my site, and find out when they're going to have the next global orgasm. So, you know, you can prepare. You get the Jergens hand cream and get ready for that. Or if you're having sex with somebody else, you know, give yourself time. Give yourself time to have some heavy petting to get yourselves all lubricated naturally. and then have an orgasm at the appropriate time. But I mean, that's kind of hard to do. It's like sort of like, you know, you ever try to like have a simultaneous orgasm with another person? It's, you know, it's like the ideal Tristan and Isolde, you know, orgasm at the same time. But it's I think it's nearly impossible. And really, you know, you're responsible for your own orgasm. So to be responsible for somebody else's orgasm is ridiculous. It's sort of like being a child of an alcoholic if you have to be responsible for somebody else's orgasm. You're responsible for your own orgasm, you know? And never, never, never accept that, you know, you're responsible for another person's orgasm, okay? Because you're not responsible for another person's orgasm. They are. It's all in your brain anyway. So, and just because you have orgasms at separate times doesn't mean you don't love each other, or that love that the love is any less, okay? Okay. Oh yeah, the Auntie Vera Charles is sort of like part Mr. Rogers. He's sort of like Mr. Rogers, too. Sort of like Paul Monnett novelette and an Ethan Mordden novel and Mr. Rogers, and he's like a puppeteer. I don't know. He's a voiceover actor, so I'm looking at my notes here because they're all over the place. Where am I at? Jose, Samuel, Philemon, Mark Arrows, Global. Okay, next we have a phone call. If you remember last week, I was bitching about Blogger, or maybe I wasn't bitching about Blogger. Did I bitch about Blogger last week? Maybe I was. Maybe I did, or maybe it was all in my mind. But anyway, I had a problem with Blogger, and I was just so upset with Blogger, I couldn't figure it out. Well, this yesterday, Friday or Saturday, I actually went into Blogger, and I clicked on something, and it fixed it. And it was like God led me there to click on this link. And I think it's because of one person was praying, had a prayer circle for me. And I'm going to play a phone call for that person right now. That person, okay, right now. Hold on.
Hello, my name is Marvin Bloom. I was sent to listen to your program by Joe G. aboard Beyond Belief. He thought I would find it, you know, I would appreciate it, which, you know, I listened to your latest episode, and, you know, and then I got convicted of the Holy Spirit because it was just so disgusting at one point, you know, that I, you know, I had to turn it off. But before that, I listened with great interest to what you were talking about with your internet problems with Blogger and everything, and I know that frustration, and, you know, it's a little-known fact, but, you know, a lot of people think that it's technology that's messing you up, but there are actually demonic spirits on the internet. Yes, you can download an internet demonic virus, all right? So it's, you know, it's evil. It's not just technical. And, you know, people over on help desk, they can't help you because they can't speak with authority in Jesus' name. But, you know, it's very common, actually, you know, because the devil loves the internet. You know, he's all over it. You know, I'm sure you know. And, you know, what needs to happen is you need to take authority in Jesus' name, which is the name above every name. Every knee shall bow, every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. And you can cast these demons out. And I know from personal experience, let me tell you, I had such trials and tribulations with, you know, an internet porn thing. And, you know, I didn't even want to look at the porn. Well, you know, not, you know, well, you know what it's like, you know. And what would happen, I'd be doing a very innocent thing online, like I'd be at Google Maps doing, like, trying to map out St. Paul's missionary journeys. And the next thing you know, I'm at furryhotbuns.com. And I'm like, Lord, you know I don't want to be here. So I felt awful. I went to pastor. He cast out some demons in me, but I still had the problem. And then he told me, you know, it's your computer. And he taught me how to cast out, you know, the evil spirits. And, well, it crashed the hard drive, but that's another story. And of course, they didn't know anything about demons at Best Buy where I got it, so I'm stuck. But, you know, a demon can get in your computer. That's the bottom line. And, you know, I know that, you know, you probably are not living a good and holy life since you are gay. So you probably don't have a whole lot of authority over these evil spirits. But if you like, you know, I can pray over your computer And, you know, of course, pray over you that you'd get delivered from the darkness and the blindness that you live under because it's just obvious from your show. I mean, you swear, you talk about gay things, sex. Anyway, I hope you have a wonderful day, and God bless you. May you come to a saving knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. All right, goodbye.
Well, that was Marvin Bloom. Thank you, Marvin. I have bloggers fixed. And as for the internet demons, no, I have them under control. They listen to me. They do. They just, I have complete control. I don't know if I have the authority of Jesus or not, but the internet demons don't bother me anymore. So thank you, Marvin Bloom, for your phone call. I really appreciate it. And, what was that? Hot Furry Buns. Thank you for that link, because I'm going to take a look for it. I'll put it up on the website, hotfurrybuns.org, because that's what Marvin had told us to look at, because I think that'd be good. So, anyway, on with the show. Are you tired of being alone? Not anymore. You can be Kenty's internet boyfriend. Just send Kenty an email or a voicemail declaring such and a picture, and Kenty will proudly display his bevy of boyfriends in a special photo album. Now you can tell people you have a boyfriend. An internet boyfriend. There is no obligation to have sex with Kenty, go on dates, remember birthdays or anniversaries. It's that easy. Be Kenty's internet boyfriend today. And now, girls can join as well. Void where prohibited by law. Only on The Flatus Show.
Just what love will do. Love may live a day or all life.
What you say, Mr. Governor, surprises me very much. And there are two things I still want to know. Why do you in America not need soldiers on your streets? And why is the governor of the state of New York calmly living in an ordinary boarding house without a trace of pomp or ceremony?
The Governor in the Boarding House, a study in American equality. Item 2 in the series Democracy in America, prepared by the Division of General Education of New York University, under the direction of George Probst, American historian. A series designed to bring to life the America of 1831, as recorded by Alexis de Tocqueville, and so to illuminate the image of democracy itself. A study in American equality. The Governor in the Boarding House.
May 1831, our first day in New York City. And to our surprise and delight, we were visited early in the morning by a gentleman we had come to know on the ship, an enthusiastic American gentleman named Mr. Schermerhorn.
Tocqueville, here is Mr. Schermerhorn to see us.
What a pleasant surprise. How kind of you to think of us.
Well, you two seem to be important men. Did you see the Mercantile Adventure, one of the morning papers?
No.
Well, have a look right here.
The Mercantile Adventurer of New York, May 12, 1831. Two magistrates, Messrs. de Beaumont and de Tocqueville, have arrived here, sent by the Ministry of the Interior to examine the various prisons in our country and make a report on their return to France. We have no doubt that every facility will be extended to these gentlemen.
Our first taste of democratic hospitality, if true.
Oh, it's true enough. Here's how things work out. This paragraph will be picked up by some of the other journals. It'll be passed on from one town to the next and from one state to the next. All kinds of people are going to read it, important people. Then they'll call on you and offer their services.
But why? Is that how things are always done in a democracy?
That's certainly how things are done here, and the why is really pretty simple. I guess you know we're pretty proud of ourselves over here in America.
We observed on the voyage that praises certainly came easily to the lips of Americans.
Don't be too polite. It's a little stronger than that. Every book that comes out is exalted to the skies. The public orators flatter the people flatter the orators, clergymen praise their flocks, and the flocks stand amazed at the excellence of their clergymen.
Well, I want to inquire
Sunday
about
school
religion.
Teachers admire their pupils, and the scholars magnify their teachers. And here's something you'll find out for yourselves. As far as guests from abroad are concerned, you'll find that you're going to need a dark corner to hide your faces in when everybody starts to praise you.
But who will praise us, Mr. Schermerhorn? We are merely two inquisitive young men from France. Why are we praiseworthy?
Well, that's what I was coming to. We're boasters, I admit it. We're proud of ourselves, I admit that. But we aren't all that proud. We haven't been in business long enough yet. We still aren't quite sure of ourselves. We have a lot of hard things to say about the old world, but even while we're saying them, we're sometimes casting a look out of the corner of our eye to see whether we've really impressed them or not. And you being sent here by your government means you people think we've got something to teach you.
Possibly.
The new world has got the jump on the old world, and the old world admits it. That's why you're going to be flattered and popular. That's why things are going to be easy for you. France is trying to learn something from America. You've heard the old proverb, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, and we reckon your flattery right now is pretty sincere.
I begin to understand. This may make our task a little easier, eh, Tocqueville?
Now look, in New York City we get moving early. People will soon be calling on you. You'll get invitations from all over the place, so I want to get in ahead of them. I've arranged for you to see Enos Throop.
Oh, this is charming of you, but who is this Mr. Throop?
Enos Thompson Throop, sir, is the governor of the state of New York.
The governor? This is certainly an honor.
Normally, the governor resides in the city of Albany, but he's in New York City right now for the Tammany Society dinner.
What is the Tammany Society?
Oh, you'll find out. No, I've made all the arrangements. Mr. Morse, who's a judge at Cherry Valley, he'll introduce. Morse is a friend of mine. Nice fella. I've written it down for you. Here's the address.
What a scene of hurry and bustle in these streets. I wonder if all this running is typical of a democracy. You notice everybody overtakes us. I thought myself a lively enough walker, but over here I seem only to dawdle. Why do the citizens of a democracy hurry?
How do we know, Tocqueville, these are typical citizens? Elsewhere, things may be very different. This New York is only one city in a vast country. Do not begin, I beg you, to build your theories until you have more facts.
Well, they all seem to wear the same clothes. Certainly, there seems to be a great deal of outward equality. All the classes seem to be intermingled. This sort of thing would be preposterous in Paris.
I wonder what this Governor Throop is going to be like.
I took a few notes. He is 47 years old, formerly a circuit judge. What is a circuit judge, I wonder? And he was only elected governor this year. Do you know what a circuit judge is, Beaumont? Beaumont?
Hmm? Oh, forgive my inattention.
You are observing the crowds.
Yes, but it's not only the people who are here that interest me so much as the ones that are missing.
Missing?
There are almost no children and no soldiers.
No children and no soldiers.
If we had walked this far in a French city, we should have seen hundreds of children and dozens of soldiers. Now, where are they?
It will give us something to ask Governor Throop. Well, here is the governor's residence.
How very peculiar. A boarding house, exactly like our own. Knock on the door.
How will people believe us when we say that the chief magistrate of the state of New York lives in an ordinary boarding house?
Possibly he and his entourage have taken over the premises. I'm sure we'll find him surrounded by the pomp and ceremony appropriate to his situation.
Good morning. Gustave de la Bonignère de Beaumont and Alexis de Tocqueville for an audience with the governor of New York. Permit me to present our credentials from the government of France.
You're the two French fellas old Schermerhorn told me about. You're surely welcome. Step right on in and meet the governor. I'm Judge Morse, and I'm real pleased to meet you.
It is an honor. Forgive me, I do not know the proper address toward a person in your station.
Just call me Judge. You, and shut the door behind you, will you? You just call any man here what you want to call him. But the fancier you call him, the more he'll be pleased.
I thought there were no aristocratic titles in a democracy.
We've managed to scrape up a few non-aristocratic ones. You couldn't toss a rock out into any street of New York City any hour of the day or night without bringing down at least a colonel. Why, just the other day, I heard tell of a delegation from one of the counties of Florida. There were 18 men in it. 4 generals, 6 colonels, 3 majors, 1 ex-governor, 1 doctor, and 1 esquire. That left only 2 fellows that were just people. Here we are. Governor, meet Mr. Tocqueville and Mr. Beaumont. Gentlemen, meet Governor Throop.
The sun comes up, I think about you. The coffee cup, I think about you. I want you so, it's like I'm losing my mind. The morning ends, I think about you. I talk to friends, I think about you. And do they know, it's like I'm losing my mind. All afternoon, doing every little chore, the thought of you stays bright. Sometimes I stand in the middle of the floor, not going left, not going right. I dim the lights and think about you. Spend sleepless nights to think about you. You said you loved me, or were you just being kind? Or am I losing my mind? I want you so, it's like I'm losing my mind. One know, it's like I'm losing my mind. All afternoon, doing every little chore, the thought of you stays bright. Sometimes I stand in the middle of the floor, not going left, not going right. I dim the lights and think about you. Spend sleepless nights to think about you. You said you loved me, or were you just being kind? Or am I losing my mind?
Delighted to have the honor.
Excellency.
Excellency.
Which of you fellows is which?
I am Alexis de Tocqueville, Excellency. Mm.
And I am Gustave de Beaumont, at your service.
Well, that's dandy. Pull up a chair and sit down. You boys seem to have got the American language pretty well licked.
We have applied ourselves conscientiously, Excellency.
Call the governor Mr. Governor. He won't know who you're talking to.
Forgive us, Mr. Governor.
Allow me to offer you some tobacco, gentlemen.
No, thank you, Judge.
No, thank you.
Oh, you gentlemen don't chew? No? Well, you're quite right. It's a filthy habit. Disgusting. Hand over the plug, Judge, and I'll take a bite. I wish I'd never taken it up.
First, Mr. Governor, let me present my credentials.
I don't need credentials. I read all about you in the papers. Come to look over the prisons.
And to see what it is like in a democracy.
Oh, I'm sure we'll do everything in our power to help you. You've been having a little trouble over there in France, I guess. Government's going up and down, things like that. Oh, don't like to say anything.
Well, that's smart and patriotic, too. We admire patriots over here. What do you make of us, Mr. Tocqueville?
This is Tim.
And this is Nanette.
From For Whatever Reason, and you're listening to The Flatus Show with Kenty.
And Jose.
How do you mean?
How do you like America?
We like it very much. What little we have seen of it.
I see you're in the tact and discernment business, too.
Well, everything is so different from France. Even on the streets there are differences. Where are the children?
Children? Why, I guess they'd be in school, wouldn't you say, Judge?
Sure. That's where they are. Unless they're playing hooky.
All the children are educated?
Well, just about as many as we can lay our hands on. We Americans are great believers in public education and self-improvement. Did you think we didn't have any children?
Well, I thought they might be working in factories or something of the sort.
Oh, some of them, I guess, are, but most will be in school.
And also, there are no soldiers. Now, how do you keep up law and order without soldiers?
Well, we have soldiers. Every man you see is a soldier. The Constitution of our Union lays it down as a sacred right of every citizen to bear arms. If we ever had need of soldiers, you'd find them springing up all around you. It's happened before, and if it's needed, it'll happen again. Every man fit to bear arms is his own soldier.
This I understand, Mr. Governor, although it surprises me. But there is something else about it that surprises me even more. First, why is the governor of the state of New York living in a boarding house without pomp and ceremony? And second, why do you not positively need at least some soldiers on your streets? How does your society hold together without the splendor of the civic arm and the might of the military arm?
Well, gentlemen, I'll tell you. It's because we in America have started on a great adventure.
I am afraid, Mr. Governor, that I do not understand you. Monsieur de Beaumont and myself, we are on an adventure. Everything we see is full of surprises.
Like finding the governor of the state of New York in a boarding house?
Exactly.
Well, it's convenient, that's what it is. If there's one thing that's hard to find nowadays around New York City, it's domestic help.
And don't you see, the governor doesn't have to worry about his prestige or anything like that. It doesn't come from himself, you see, it comes from the people. Don't forget, this is a democracy.
Even if we wish to forget it...
Which I assure you, we do not.
We find it thrust upon us at every point.
Well, I guess every country's proud of its native institutions. And I guess we Americans are a little prouder than the average because we figure we really have something to be proud about.
I believe we have noticed that.
I believe you have, Mr. Tocqueville. I wouldn't be surprised if you haven't been pumped up to the eyebrows with boasting from everyone you've met, myself included. Still, if you're on to a good thing, you want other people to know about it.
And you are convinced, Mr. Governor, that this democracy is a good thing?
Sure, I'm convinced. Oh, not that it hasn't its bad side, mind you, and Judge Morris here and myself know all about it. We've sat on the bench and judged our fellow creatures in a pretty miserable bunch some of them turned out to be, too.
They surely did. But even there, I take issue with you, Mr. Governor.
Go ahead.
Well, I had a fella before me one day who was by way of being a burglar. This fella had broken into a good-looking house, but when he got in, he found there was more to the wrapping than there was to the package.
I beg your pardon.
The place looked good, but there was nothing worth stealing inside. He hunted around a spell, couldn't find anything he wanted, so he finally left. But when he got outside, he found it had come on to rain. Back he goes into the house and steals a fine new cotton umbrella. It was just coming on daylight when he got back into the city, and this umbrella was getting to be an embarrassment to him. He didn't want to be caught with it. I asked him why he didn't get rid of it. Well, now, Judge, I tell you, he said, I calculated there'd be even more trouble if anyone had caught me heaving it away. So what he did, he gave it to a friend in the same line of business as himself. They caught the friend. The friend said where he'd got the umbrella from. And this other fella's in the penitentiary right now, thinking it all over.
I remember sky, it was blue as ink, or at least I think. I remember sky. snow. Soft as feathers, sharp as thumbtacks, coming down like lead. And it made you squint when the wind would blow, and ice like vinyl on the streets, cold as silver, white as sheet, rain like strings and changing things like leaves. I remember leaves, green as spearmint, crisp as paper. I remember trees, bare as coat racks, spread like broken umbrellas, and parks and bridges, ponds and zoos, ruddy faces, muddy shoes, light and noise, and bees and boys and days. I remember days, or at least I try. But as years go by, they're a sort of haze, and the bluest ink isn't really sky. And at times I think I would gladly die for a day of sky.
Well, that's a good story, Judge, but I don't see where it fits in.
It fits in this way, Mr. Governor. We've got our bad eggs and our rotten apples, same as anyone else. But even when they're bad, they got a democratic flavor about them. That fella talked to me from the dock as though I were his equal. No, he did better than that. He talked to me as though he were my employer.
If you will forgive me, sir, your story shows me something else. The way you tell it shows me a sort of fundamental sympathy with this wrongdoer.
I wouldn't exactly say that. A good judge ought to come at a criminal the way he goes for a bottle of port. Try him carefully, then punish him severely.
But nonetheless, I detect a feeling that this man is, after all, a human being.
Well, isn't he?
Oh, quite so. But in our country, there are many people who find it very hard to realize that. Madame de Sévigné, for instance. She was a brilliant, sensitive woman, but a true aristocrat. It would be scarcely unfair to say that Madame de Sévigné, like many aristocrats, had no clear notion of suffering in anyone who was not a person of quality.
Yes, I see what you mean. That certainly isn't true here. We have our faults, but on the whole, I believe we're a humanitarian people. We like to think well of people, and usually we have a basic belief in fair play.
But, Mr. Governor, to return to the question of soldiers...
Oh, yes, yes. Why aren't there any? Is that what you mean?
Exactly.
Is this just peculiar to the city of New York? We've already been told several times that New York is not, after all, America.
Nor is it. But you won't find much in the way of soldiers wherever you go. As I said, we're on an adventure. Every man, Jack, has a stake in the country. It's to his own benefit to live in a peaceful, happy community. Everything, in short, is regulated as far as possible by enlightened self-interest, which is the basis of our democracy. Every man is every man's equal. Every man is every man's associate. Every man is every man's customer. Put your society on those terms, Mr. Tocqueville, and you'll not need the military because you will have extinguished the mob. That body of the poor and depressed, who can have no interest in the stability which never steadies them, a settled tranquility which never relaxes them, a prosperity which never touches them. The bond of this mighty continental nation, gentlemen, for to tell you the truth, I don't know whether we're a nation or a continent yet, the bond is commercial liberty. Not mere political liberty, but positive freedom from all the slightest restraints. That is the birthright of this growing country.
Is freedom from all restraints wholly good, Mr. Governor?
Is anything wholly good, Mr. Tocqueville? I don't know. I'm sure it must have its dark side, and I'm equally sure that this country wants it and that this country's got it. It is a heritage as natural as the air we breathe, whether it sweetens the hard toil of New England or inflates the hot pride of the South. It's always the same brave spirit pervading the same republic. And its influence is not the less powerful because it is everywhere propagated by an animating spirit of dispute.
Animating spirit.
You're taking notes, Mr. Tocqueville. I'm glad to see you do it. Take a note of this. The American people, dispersed over an immense territory, abounding in all the means of commercial greatness, who early found an opportunity of adapting their government to their circumstances.
Adapting their government to their circumstances. Yeah,
they followed the manifest order of nature when they adopted a constitution which was free, a constitution which was republican, and a constitution which was based on a commercial federation.
But, Mr. Governor, was that desirable?
No, sir. I will not comment on its desirability, except to say this. As far as we are concerned, it is infinitely desirable, because it was wholly inevitable. Will you forgive me if I speak for a moment of your own country and speak to you privately as a man?
We should be honored.
Very well, sir. Your country, too, has recently passed through a great revolution, but one which I cannot help feeling has had a very different influence on your destiny. You will forgive the strong language, but I cannot help but remark that the course, and indeed the catastrophe, of the French Revolution has cast a gloom over republicanism which perhaps it may never shake off, and which renders it, in Europe, repulsive and discreditable, at least for the present. But here, sir, is the difference between your revolution and ours. The American Republic is the natural fruit of the American soil. The spirit of freedom may be impassioned, it may be factious, but it is neither furious nor bloody. The strong bonds of union are here and will remain. There is a common language, there are common laws, there are common political attachments, and finally, and above all, there is the great reciprocal bond of common interest. Remember this always, gentlemen. We live on trade. We live by trade. We live for trade. Trade is our life. And I tell you frankly, we all regard the carrying on of trade as something to which a man may honorably devote his whole life. And indeed, while we are talking today, 100 ships are discharging their cargoes, and 1,000 emigrants from all parts of the globe are landing with big hearts and stout hopes to realize their dreams of a free and happy West.
Oysters, penny apiece. Raw oysters, liberally salted, only a penny apiece.
Listen, Beaumont. Listen to the streetcars. Everywhere we are pursued by this wild enthusiasm for trade.
There are also street criers in France.
Ah, but these street criers are different. They have meaning. They belong to a pattern.
Sweep, oh, sweep all up. Sweep all up from the bottom to the top without ladder or rope. Sweep, sweep.
You're eyeing that chimney sweep as if he were a future millionaire of this new democracy.
Who knows? Perhaps he may be.
The governor's ideas have excited you.
What we are seeing, Beaumont, is a new world unfolding.
Whale oil, fill your lamps, find whale oil.
Cattails, cattails to make beds going. Cattails, cattails.
Well, she's selling reeds and bulrushes.
I will not write down that Americans sometimes sleep on the tails of cats. Look across the street. In front of every shop, there are long boards nailed across two posts with appeals for trade on them. Visit the pleasure railway at Hoboken. Bar. Warm, cold, shower and vapor. Sulfur and other medicated baths in marble and tin tubs.
Tocqueville. Stop looking at those silly signs and listen for a moment.
Certainly, I'm all ears. Dogs. That is the sound of dogs.
Quite so, but what are they doing to them?
Look. Look down there. There are men running after dogs and killing them with clubs. Let us go and see.
But this is appalling. There's blood all over the road. And 7, 8, 9 dead dogs beaten to death. This is a strange scene for a humanitarian country.
It recalls what one has read of the Reign of Terror. Pardon me, sir, but why are these men killing so many dogs?
Call me at 206-984-3617 and let me know what you're thinking.
Are you a foreigner?
Yes, sir.
From Germany, likely.
No, from France.
You over here on business?
You might say so, but why are these dogs...
Haberdashery? Hardware? Export and import?
Anything that strikes our fancy. These dogs...
General line, eh? Same as me.
Very possibly.
Yeah, my name's Hawkins. I don't believe I caught your name.
Tocqueville.
It sounds foreign. Well, of course. You said you were a foreigner. Dutch name?
From France.
Blame me. That's what you said. I don't believe I caught your name, sir, either.
My name is Beaumont.
Oh, that sounds foreign. Oh, wait, you told me. Swedish name?
Also French.
Well, that's refreshing. I'm certainly honored to make the acquaintance. Now, what can I do for you?
Why are all those men killing all those dogs?
Why, they're the city dog killers. What else would you expect them to do?
This, then, is their job?
Around here, there are too many dogs. They just run wild in the streets. You got to do something about them. Usually, we got to kill off 4,000 or 5,000 in a year. In the hot weather, they're knocking them down at the rate of 300 a day.
But it is so cruel. Look, sometimes the animals are only maimed.
What else would you suggest? I wouldn't want to do the job myself. I don't like getting blood all over me. But I'll tell you this. The job's got to be done. We Americans don't like anybody criticizing anything that we reckon we ought to do. Least of all, Italians and Portuguese and foreigners generally. So I think you'd find it wise to remember that. And not be so free with your unwarranted accusations. I give you a good day.
Well,
evidently an American Democrat can be just as sensitive and touchy as a European aristocrat.
But the European boasts of what his country is. The American of what it does.
Let us leave this shambles. Already I can see it's not going to be very easy to understand this country.
More noise. There is a band now. Surely the streets of New York must be the noisiest and busiest in the world.
And yet, for all their bustle and prosperity, I feel all the time that we are walking about in a city which is nothing but one gigantic suburb.
There they go, across the end of the street. Flags, banners, bands. What can all this be? Three cheers for the clockmakers!
Plumbers and gas fitters!
Hooray! Hooray!
Hooray! Three cheers for the bakers! Hooray! Hooray!
I can hardly believe my own eyes. This is a parade of tradesmen, of mechanics. Look at them. Look at the banners. The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker.
It is miraculous. Did you ever see such assurance, such confidence, such calm complacency with which these fellows hold up all the traffic? And listen to the cheers of the people.
Yes, the governor told us that these people think that the carrying on of trade is something to which a man may honorably devote his whole life.
And look at their clothes. Sleek coats, glossy hats, gay watch guards, and doeskin gloves.
Hey there! Look at the dandy mechanics! Give them three cheers, boys! Three cheers for the dandy mechanics!
The dandy mechanics. It is the right name for them.
There is an unbelievable outward equality in America.
The whole country has melted into a middle class. A remarkable thing. A country blessed with nature's richest gifts and selected by Providence for the noblest experiment tried by man, which is not only the civilization of a new world, but the practical establishment of principles that till now have only had an ideal existence. A great people which has no army, a country full of activity and vigor, where the action of the government is hardly perceived. A world given up to trade and equality, and proud of both.
Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
And what would happen, I'd be doing a very innocent thing online, like I'd be at Google Maps doing, like, trying to map out St. Paul's missionary journeys. And the next thing you know, I'm at furryhotbuns.com, and I'm like, Lord, you know I don't want to be here. So I felt off. I went to pass. He cast out some demons in me, but I still had the problem, and then he told me, you know, it's your computer.